Good morning, everyone. I think that I know that we're in Book 3, Canto 3, The House of the Spirit and the New Creation, and I think we stopped at the bottom of page 325, where the break is. 325 at the break. So we're in the middle of the description of the new creation. This canto is called The House of the Spirit and the New Creation. First, Asvapati was able to enter the House of the Spirit, and then he was shown how this new creation arises in the light and its characteristics. And we now continue with the second half of that. You'll start, Antim?
In this vast outbreak of perfection's law, imposing its fixity on the flux of things, he saw a hierarchy of lucent planes enfiered to this highest kingdom of God's state. Attuning to one truth, their own right rule, each housed the gladness of a bright degree, alone in beauty, perfect in self-kind, an image cast by one deep truth's absolute, married to all in a happy difference.
Thank you. So this whole new creation is ruled by the law of perfection. It is a vast outbreak of the law of perfection, and it's that law which is imposing its fixity. That is the law which all the flow of things in that world is determined by. And Asvapati sees there a hierarchy of planes, just as in our world the planes of existence are arranged in a hierarchy, it is the same there. He will tell us about some of these planes. All those planes are full of light, and they are all enfiefed to this highest kingdom of God's state. Enfiefed is a word from the feudal system. Anywhere where they have a feudal system, it works similarly. There's a highest authority who delegates rights and powers to other lesser authorities. A king to his knights, or in Tibet it was the Dalai Lama who delegated certain parts of the country to be looked after by local rulers. So those people owe their loyalty to the highest authority. They are supposed to help that highest authority, who represents the whole in any case of need, but their own fief, their own fiefdom, they can rule themselves, and they too will delegate to people beneath them. So that's how this hierarchy is set up. It's under the highest kingdom of God's state, which is ruled by the law of perfection. And each of them is housing the gladness of a bright degree. Each of them has a special area to take care of, a particular degree of perfection or level, and they do that with delight. Each of them is uniquely beautiful, perfect in its own kind. But each of them is an image cast, projected by one deep truth's absolute. And all of them are married to all the others in happy difference. There's a uniting harmony of all these different powers, planes. We'll go on. Yeah.
Each gave its powers to help its neighbor's parts, but suffered no diminished harmless air on the white purity of the witness soul.
Next two lines, please, Patricia.
These hues were the very prism of the Supreme. His beauty, power, delight, creation's cause.
Thank you. Anything to ask or share?
He's still talking about these different planes?
Yes, when he's...
Relation,
I think so, yes. When he says each, then it must refer to the planes, yes. But at the same time, we can't help feeling that it's a description of an ideal society. Mm-hmm. These are the relations that there should be amongst individuals. But there's this mysterious sentence from line 330 to 334. Even in the poise where oneness draws apart to feel the rapture of its separate selves, the soul in its solitude yearned towards the all, and the many turned to look back at the one. This makes me think about what Sri Aurobindo says in the Life Divine about the truth consciousness, the supramental consciousness, which can simultaneously experience three poises, be aware of three poises. On one level, there is the one, the Satchidananda, containing in itself all the universal possibilities. And then there's a second level where those possibilities are individualized and yet held together as the one. And then there is the poise of the manyness, the multitude. So here he shows us how these three poises are interconnected. No? I'm not sure. The poise where the oneness draws apart to feel the rapture of its separate selves. So it separates its oneness, maybe, no? But still, the soul one in its solitude is still there, and it's feeling a yearning, a longing towards the all the possibilities, the universal expression. And the many are feeling their connection or their origin in the one. It's this poise of three different relationships to the divine. A poise, yes, it's the word particularly that Sri Aurobindo uses in this context in the life divine. A poise is a balanced position where you can remain, you know, for a long time. And of course we in our physical bodies and in our present consciousness, we are confined to one particular poise, both of the body. We can't have more than one at a time. In dance we explore many, but it's in succession, you know. And similarly with our consciousness, either we're in one state of consciousness or we're in another one. To have to be aware of two at the same time is not possible for us. That's part of our limitations. Yes, Don.
I don't know where you put it to us there, but there is the absolute being, one, and then there is the being as the becoming. And that would just manifest there.
Yeah, that would only be two poises, wouldn't it?
Well, the becoming has infinite poises. Being has one poise. The becoming,
and between linking the being and the becoming, there's this poise of consciousness, when the many, the multitude, are experienced within the one, as part of the one. And there's a different poise where they're all experienced as separate beings, or separate planes in this particular case. Yeah.
Advisor for meditation to see the Brahman in all in the Brahman, and all as the Brahman in becoming.
Yeah. And then the next bit, what does the next bit mean? The creative power here is bliss, delight, which reveals and creates everything. And that bliss in its creative aspect is looking for forms in which to manifest, to express divine truths. So to start with, it aligns, it arranges in a meaningful way in their significant mystery. The different gleams, the different colors of the symbols of the ineffable. And these are kind of projected, blazoned, like colors, like hues, upon a colorless air, the white purity of the witness soul. So the witness soul can not only see but experience all these different tones and shades expressing the inexpressible, the ineffable. And then he goes on to say that these hues were the very prism of the Supreme. The prism is when we split up the white light so that we can see the different colors constituting it. So it, these, that all these different colors are expressing the Supreme and his beauty and power and delight is the cause of this creation.
It's just a sharing that in these, this passage, you can see the world that we know, our earth, and all the many countries and all the different factions and everything. And as using that, easily see that all of that is still existing in oneself.
All the different hues.
Yes. Mm. And you can see this and know that there's just a veil. And on the other side is this world, the new creation. But here is not ready yet. We aren't ready.
It requires a different poise of consciousness to be able to see and live this.
Yes, and you can easily understand, watching the world and oneself, that the sudden appearance of one huge supermental face in the sky would drive the whole world into chaos, because we would all fight each other and be afraid.
Yes.
We're not there.
Yes, and a lot of the confusion that's going on in the world today may be due to the pressure of this truth consciousness trying to get it expressed, but in these very, very imperfect and unprepared instruments. So, but he's seeing this on the very highest level of consciousness. The ideal, the new creation, how it should be. This, and of course, if we think about this in the context of Asvapati's search, he had wonderful spiritual experiences as part of his sadhana way back in Book 1 in Canto 5, 3 and 5, and when he set off on his quest, he was looking for a way for those realities which he experienced in concentration or in trance to become real here in our world. And that's what he's been looking for, the power or the way to make them real here. And on the way he has found that power, he's found the Supreme Divine Mother and realized how much he has to change in himself in order to embody her power and bliss. And he's realized that he doesn't want it just for himself and his immediate surroundings. He wants it for the whole earth, the whole of humanity. And it's subsequent to all that that he's being given this vision of the new creation. And I always feel when we read these beautiful lines, something familiar. It's as if this dream or this vision is encoded in us somewhere. We know that this is how things should be. And that's why we are so dissatisfied and distressed by the way that things are. But here it is interesting to see it in terms of the planes. First he's told us about all the planes. And then he told us about this poise where oneness draws apart. Perhaps this maybe is the supermind level. And then he's telling us about the creative power of bliss. And now this gets passed on this projection of the colors, something happens to them. Jocelyn, would you read? A vast truth consciousness took up these signs, these colors, these projections, and transmits them to some divine child heart, some capacity of youthful delight that really enjoys them, that looked on them with laughter and delight and joyed in these transcendent images. These are images that are still beyond the manifestation, living and real as the truths they house, the truths that they contain. So as a result, that white purity of the witness soul, the spirit's white neutrality, changes, it gets transformed into a playground of miracles with a lot of interchange, a rendezvous, a meeting place for the secret powers of a mystic timelessness. All the many, many powers of something that is not bound by time. So I think it's that timelessness that turns space into a marvel house of God, and that pours through time its works of ageless might, unaging power. And that mystic timelessness, when it's unveiled, is seen as a face, a luring, rapturous face that expresses the wonder and beauty of its love and force. So here we recognize the mother again. And this is the state or stage, perhaps, of the two in one, where she's moving as the eternal goddess is moving in her cosmic house, her house of the universe, playing with God as a mother with her child. This relationship between Ishwara and Ishwari, or Purusha and Prakriti, is referred to in Canto 4, where he says that she holds the Lord like a babe on her knees, and he revels in her, he swims in her as a swimmer in seas, he delights in everything that she presents to him. So that's what comes in the next two lines. To him, the whole universe was her bosom of love, and his toys, his playthings, were the immortal verities, the truth. He can play with them and enjoy them.
gives four ways to say the same thing in this.
Four aspects.
How do you play with verities?
Well, if everything is an expression of the truth consciousness, any relationship, any play of relationship that you enjoy, that you delight in. Mm. And those immortal verities are in fact infinite. But now he's going to put some of them in their place. Helmut, would you read?
All fear selfless, prepare its divine place. The powers that here betray our heart and earth, where they are sovereign in truth, perfect in joy, masters in the creation without flaw, possessors of their own infinitude. They are mind, a splendid sun of vision's rays, shaped substance by the glory of its thoughts, and move amid the grandeur of its dreams. Imagination's great and sorcery lord summon the unknown and gave the whole. Outspread luxuriantly in golden hair, truth's iris colored wings of fantasy, or sang to the intuitive heart of joy, wondrous dream notes that bring the real close.
Let's pause there. All here self-lost had there its divine place. So those powers, when they are manifested in the material universe, have voluntarily lost themselves in, by the involution process into the inconscient, by that process of self-forgetfulness. And they are here evolving, unfolding, and trying to discover themselves. But in that creation which Asvapati is seeing, each of them has its divine and perfect place, the place that it is meant to have. And that includes these powers that here in our world betray our hearts, let us down, and they make mistakes, they err. But there, they are sovereign in truth, rulers, perfect in joy, masters in a creation without flaw. There's absolutely no imperfection in it. There, they are in possession of their own infinitude, their quality of infiniteness. And he gives the example first of mind, the power of mind, which for us, we recognize the imperfection of mind at this present evolutionary stage, no? But there, mind is a splendid sun with many, many rays of vision, of powers of sight. Dhyumatsena, Satyavan's father, Sri Aurobindo says in his author's note, represents the divine mind, and his name means Lord of the Shining Hosts, the Shining Armies. So those armies are his rays of vision. But here he has fallen blind. Here he's lost his power. of vision, and he's lost his power to rule. No? But there it has all its powers. Mind is a commander of all these shining armies of vision's rays. And it uses that power to shape substance. Mind shapes substance also out in our universe. We read about it when we were in the kingdoms and godheads of the greater mind. But there it's able to do it in a much more wonderful way. It shapes substance by the glory of its thoughts and moves there in the midst of its dreams, the grandeur of its dreams. And one of the powers of mind is imagination. And imagination he describes as a magician with a magic wand, an ensorcelling rod. Nowadays we have conjurers and they have a little stick, no? But it's a symbol of that wand, that rod of mastery which the great initiates have, with which the magician, the enchanter, summons the powers. So here, imagination's rod summons the unknown and gives it a place to live and a form. And it spreads out luxuriantly in golden air iris-colored wings of fantasy. Iris-colored, all the colors of the rainbow. It does magic. It spreads them all out. But these are all the wings of fantasy, of truth. Or imagination also sings to the heart a wonderful music, a magical song that brings reality close. Is that where we stopped?
Yeah.
This is what our imagination should be doing for us. We have all kinds of disastrous imaginations and they tend to come true, no? But we should be using our imagination in another way to bring the real close. And of course, this is one of the functions of art that Mother wanted to encourage, that imagination and dreams and all this should be used to bring those beautiful higher realities closer to our world and help them to be manifested here. That's the true function of imagination. Tekeste, you will read. Thank you. So this is the power of imagination. It makes the unknowable near and true. And using that power, it does all these wonderful things. It fills the thought and mind and the happy senses of the beings in that world. It fills them with all these bright aspects of the power of God. And living persons who are all parts and portions of the One Supreme. It's clear, shall we go on? Patty?
There was no gulf between the thought and the fact. Everything replied like bird to calling bird. The will obeyed the thought, the act, the will. There was a harmony woven with soul and soul. A marriage with eternity, divinized time. There life pursued, unwearied of her sport, joy in her heart and laughter on her lips, the bright adventure of God's game of chance. In her ingenious ardor of caprice, in her transfiguring mirth, she mapped on time a fascinating puzzle of events, lured at each turn by new vicissitudes to self-discovery that would never cease. Ever she framed stark bonds for the will to break, brought new creations for the thought's surprise, and passionate adventures for the heart to dare. Where truth recurred with an unexpected face, or else repeated old familiar joy, like the return of a delightful rhyme.
Thank you. So this is the action of life. That's another one of these powers, which there has its divine place. This is what life should be like, the play of life. Have you got vicissitudes in your dictionary, Don?
Vicissitudes?
Vicissitudes are usually negative,
yes,
no?
The
bad things that happen unexpectedly, yeah. But I think...
The changes and mutations characterizing a process, especially of human affairs, in which an alternating succession of extremes is the natural course of good and bad.
Good and bad, everything changing unexpectedly, unpredictably. So that's part of this bright adventure of God's game of chance, and this fascinating puzzle of events. But these new vicissitudes help towards self-discovery. It could never cease. Ever she framed stark bonds for the will to break. We don't notice when things become difficult that life is posing us these challenges so that we can become stronger, that our will can become stronger. And through all these things which she offers, truth is, it's always truth coming back, but truth coming back with an unexpected face. Or else in a familiar way that we are just delighted to see again, a familiar joy like the return of a delightful rhyme. To astonish us. Yes. Mirth is happiness, laughter, and this laughter transfigures things. Transfiguring is an interesting word. It's like transmuting or transforming, but with transfiguring we specially think of things being turned into their most divine expression or appearance. So that's what she's doing. I mean, she's transfiguring things, always presenting them in new forms and laughing at what she's doing, mapping this out in time, this fascinating puzzle of events. There's an episode in the New Testament where Jesus and two of his disciples, he takes them up to the top of the mountain, and the others who are left below, they see them in divine forms. And then they want to stay there, but Jesus says, no, we have to go down again.
You say the dream?
Drama.
Of divine delight. A living poem of bold ecstasy. A moment of significant poems.
Finding. Thank you. So this is all life, no? The action of life. She. This word teeming is very suggestive, no? Teeming is what ants do, or locusts, or the Chinese. There are so many of them that you can't count them. So there are she's so full of different expressions for her world idea.